The highest and most glorious Religion is the attainment of causes unrelated to Osho's service. From right from the beginning, from the get-go, not only is auspiciousness invoked, blessings given to the leader, those in touch with the Bhagavatam, but also the crux or the main message of the Bhagavatam is given, an explanation of what the goal of studying the Bhagavatam is, the goal of attaining Krishna is to perform unmotivated, uninterrupted devotional, pure devotional service. So this verse, which is the first verse, the explanation of what pure devotional service is given, of course, in the nectar of devotion, the first verse, and it's also been repeated in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bhajavila, chapter 19, text 167. So the verse that we all learn in the Bhakti Shastri, Anya Bilasita Shinyam, Jnana Kamadyanitam, Anukhina Anishinam, Krishna Bhakti Vajanam. That this particular verse explains what pure devotional service is, without desire other than service to Krishna. So that is anyavilasita sunyam. There is no other desire but to serve Krishna. There is no desire for karma yoga. There is no desire for jnana yoga. There is no desire for mental speculation or philosophical speculation. But the only desire is to please the Lord. And that is the only motive of the pure devotee. And motive here, Prabhupada further confirms that actually not really a motive, but rather the natural or the pure condition of the living entity is to please the Lord. So that is our inherent nature, just as in different books of Prabhupada, I will speak about how the nature of fire knows to burn and heat, the nature of water is its liquidity. Although these things can be manipulated to produce different other effects, however, the nature of water is that it is liquid. And similarly, the nature of the living entity is to please the Lord. That is our pure condition, that is our pure state. So, in pure devotional service, our only motive should be to please the Lord. Now, we might think, when we read this, we might be a little bit fearful because, at least for myself, I'm not on the level of pure devotional service. So does that mean that just because I haven't attained pure devotional service, I shouldn't strive to endeavor or I should lose hope? But there's different levels that we begin Krishna consciousness at. You know, in the beginning chapters, in the seventh chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, where pure bhakti is being described and discussed, Krishna is explaining the fortunate persons who actually approach him. Krishna explains the, I'll just read the verse actually. Tatul yudu padantimam jnana sukritin arjuna artha ityasu artati jnani cha rathasavam. Oh, best among the Bharatas, four kind of pious men begin to render devotional service unto me, the distressed, the desire of wealth, inquisitive, and who is searching for knowledge of the absolute truth. So we're on the path of trying to perform pure devotional service. However, when most of us come, there is some motive. Now we're looking to be practitioners of pure devotional service, but we're still in a state, in a conditioned state, and therefore we approach Krishna for the wrong reasons initially. So either we want some freedom from material distress, or we want a different lifestyle, so we see the Krishna consciousness culture, lifestyle, and we become attracted. We might not necessarily have a particular attraction for Krishna as a person, although Krishna means Krishna, his paraphernalia, including his devotees, his name, prasadam. So there's different manifestations of Krishna, but initially we do not understand that, so we are still separating Krishna from his manifestations. So we might be attracted to halwa, or we might be attracted to coming to this space and being in an environment where we feel calm and collected, and we feel a certain level of equilibrium from within, that everything is stable from within. So initially, we might come for some reasons other than just to please Krishna. Some come for wealth, you know, you put a little money in the hundi, good karma, later on, good life. Even in the afterlife, we're thinking it will be good. If I give $10 a week to Krishna, it will be okay. So there is some... So the reasons themselves, they are not pure yet. It is not just to please Krishna. Nevertheless, Krishna himself, Prabhupada, is explaining that even with these four types of persons who approach Krishna, Krishna himself says that they are various. Krishna called them mahatmas in the next verse. So Prabhupada further explains, I will just quote exactly what Prabhupada says in the Purport text 18, after Krishna says that all these devotees who come to me, whether it's out of distress, desiring wealth, those who are inquisitive, or just seeking knowledge, these great souls are magnanimous because they are coming to me. They are approaching me with their desires. And you can similarly equate it with the verse, whether one is full of desires, whether one has no desires, or if one is desiring X, Y, Z, still approach Krishna. Whatever desires we have, we approach Krishna, and Krishna will reciprocate accordingly in such a way that we will only desire him gradually. So Srila Prabhupada in the Purport is explaining that the Lord says that all are magnanimous because anyone who comes to the Lord for any purpose is called a mahatma or great soul. The devotee who wants some benefit out of devotional service are accepted by the Lord because there is an exchange of affection. Out of affection, they ask the Lord for some material benefit, and when they get it, they become so satisfied that they also advance in devotional service. But the devotee in full knowledge is considered to be very dear to the Lord because his only purpose is to serve the Supreme Lord with loving devotion. So out of these four, the Lord himself says, though the most dear one, of course, is one who approaches him seeking knowledge about him, trying to understand him. However, these four persons who do come to Krishna over time, their desires do get purified by associating with the pure devotee. So by coming to contact with someone who has much more knowledge about Krishna and the process of self-realization, one's heart begins to transform just from hearing about the personality of Krishna, hearing about Krishna's devotees, and the relationship that Krishna has with different types of devotees. That just because one comes with ulterior motive, Krishna does not reject. Actually, Krishna, as he said, if you approach me, I will accept you. And Krishna will reciprocate with a living entity gradually over time to bring them to a platform where their faith is steady, then they can accept him as their personality. So by associating with a pure devotee, these four types of persons who are referred to as magnanimous souls, as mahatmas, they can also become pure. So we become pure by associating with a pure devotee, whether it's in the literature or whether it's through his or her disciples or those who are carrying out the message that he is propounding. So by associating, for example, with Srila Prabhupada through his books, Srila Prabhupada did say that if we want to know him, we should read his books. Then we understand who he is. So by studying Srila Prabhupada's books, by associating with those who have studied Srila Prabhupada's books and who are still studying Srila Prabhupada's books, we can understand the process of devotional service, not just on the surface, but even going deeper and deeper. Not just the externals, or not just the etiquettes, or the lingo, not just everyday thing, but actually going deeper into the process of bhakti and in an effort to purify the heart and transform ourselves. So by associating with this, with the pure devotees, we can also become pure. And the pure devotees themselves, they will engage us in the process of Shravanam Kirtanam. All the processes given by, or explained by Prahlad Maharaj in the 7th canto, Shravanam Kirtanam. Vishnu Swarnam, Ashnam Vananam, Dasyam Satyam Adnam Vedanam. These processes have been further explained by Prabhupada as well in his purports, in that a pure, one who is practicing pure devotional service, very seriously practices and every single day these processes, these 9 processes of devotional service. So hearing about Krishna, repeating Krishna's glories, worshipping Krishna, his devotees, etc. When we engage in these processes, we achieve or we attain the highest form of pure devotional service. And we follow in the footsteps of those who similarly follow suit. So the highest example, of course, is the gopis of Vrindavan, who are always engaged. Their entire being, their body, their thoughts, their words, their actions, their dreams, their everything, they're engaging it in the service of Krishna. So in different pastimes we see how the devotee acts, how the devotee behaves in relation to pleasing Krishna. So even if there is a dispute, that dispute is giving pleasure to Krishna, so the devotees perform that pastime to give Krishna pleasure. So for example, I'm working on editing a book, one of Krishna's pastimes, and in there I see just how the entire residents of Vrindavan work day and night just to try to satisfy Krishna. And what satisfies Krishna the most but being immune and not having pastime with the gopis, particularly Shrimati Radharani. So everyone from Vrinda Devi to Lalita Vishaka and comic boards, they're engaging in these pastimes, in this particular pastime, to try to unite the divine couple. And then by doing so, there's so many things that go on, so many tricks, so much word juggling, so much escape, a lot of miscommunication, a lot of activities that might seem look very strange for pure devotional service, but all these activities are leading to increasing the pleasure of the Lord in union with his devotees. So everything from the trees, to the bamboos, to the stones, to the dust, to the cows, they are all acting to please the senses of the Lord. And by pleasing the Lord, they also become pleased. Because we're really, I was thinking about it the other day, because we are part of Krishna in quality, we're parts and parcels of Krishna, so naturally when Krishna is pleased, will also become pleased. When we feed the body, all parts of the body also get nourished simultaneously. So I try to think about this every day when I eat, that my entire body is getting nourished and I'm healthy because I'm using the hands to feed the entire body. So if I feed the transcendental senses of the Lord, if I please the Lord, I will also be pleased. But there's still a disconnect, a in my mind because I'm still not pleasing the senses of the Lord all the time, although the philosophy, although the pages of the Bhagavatam are saying that still there is some doubt within me. So hopefully, by the purifying effect of devotional service, this will wither away. So in this verse of Anyabhyasana Sunyam, what is quoted in the CC, Srila Prabhupada mentions that the beginning of pure devotional service is this Anyabhyasana Sunyam, having no desire other than to serve Krishna. That is the beginning of pure devotional service. Like I mentioned earlier on, most of us come with different motives or different desires initially, and over time these desires get purified to want to please Krishna. We move from a duty-bound commitment to a commitment based on pure love. So over time, as we practice Krishna consciousness, we might arrive at this Anyabhyasita Sunyam stage where we have no other desire but to serve and please Krishna. So as we grow in devotional service, because bhakti is a science, the nature of devotion has taught us and is still teaching us how, by practicing the process, we gradually get elevated from the, we could say, the lower stage of devotional service to the highest platform. Initially, when we come, we feel relief from material distress, whether it's our own mind and body, other living entities, whatever distress, we feel relief, and there's a certain shower of happiness that we experience at the same time. I think most of us will have experienced that when we come to Krishna consciousness, everything is just great. Life has changed for the better, and we don't feel that heavy weight of material existence, the burden, the klesha. We don't feel bound by the ropes of material existence. These ropes are slacking because now we're trying to embrace the process of Krishna consciousness, which means Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we feel relief from material distress, and we feel a certain amount of happiness. And this, in the nectar of devotion, is explained to take place on the platform of sadhana. This is part of the characteristics of pure devotional service, those beginning stages. And if we go through them, we get purified and attain pure devotional service. So in the sadhana platform, it's being explained by Srila Rupa Goswami that we feel these ropes of material existence that have been binding us lifetime after lifetime, and we feel them relief, and there's a certain amount of happiness that we will taste. And that pushes us forward to develop more faith in Krishna consciousness and to start associating with devotees. And gradually, as we rise, the transcendental happiness increases more and more, and we do not get attracted to different types of liberation. We don't get attracted to just escaping the three modes of material nature. We get attracted to something even beyond moksha. We're not just after liberation, but we're after Krishna. We want that type of liberation that reinstates us as servants of Krishna, not just as spirit souls, but servants of Krishna. So we're accepting that we want to get relief from material existence, but even further than that, we want to serve Krishna. So moksha itself is not attractive to us. Although it might be offered, it is not attractive. So although we might have some residue or some desire to want to become one, or some desire to attain heavenly pleasures, the process of pure devotional service is so strong that these things become unattractive. What becomes attractive really is Krishna. The taste for Krishna becomes more attractive. And that is what's explained as Sannananda Vishishatma in Kalki Condensed Bliss. that when Krishna gives us snippets of our taste of what it means to hear his holy name, to taste his prasad, to associate with the devotees of Jorzad in a holy place, attend festivals, when we get a taste from that, there is no other type of happiness or bliss that even comes close. The fact that some of us are still here, practicing Krishna consciousness, 12 years later, is proof that the process is real and it works, because we were tasting other things before, and we were addicted to many things before. Really addicted. We were addicted to material sense enjoyment. We were addicted to different flavors. I was speaking to one girl I met at a uni program last week or the week before, and she was telling me, you know, don't you miss it? Don't you miss, you know, tasting this and then different flavor of this and a different flavor of that? And I was thinking to myself, no, I don't, because it's the same thing. Whether you bite an apple from this side or that side, an apple is an apple, you're going to taste the same thing. So it's the same clubbing, it's the same alcohol, tastes the same wherever you go. The Heineken in South Africa is still the Heineken here. You know, the, I don't know what people drink here, whatever. Alcohol is alcohol, cigarettes are cigarettes. Intoxicants are intoxicants. They produce the same effect. They agitate the senses, they agitate the mind, they make it difficult for you to control the senses, you behave irrationally, you are predisposed to anger, to envy, to illusion, to being proud of your personality, being proud of who you are, what you look like. You are predisposed to these things when you take intoxicants. So whether I do it in South America, in South Africa, or in Australia, it's going to predispose me to behave in the same way. So in that sense, I was thinking, no, I don't miss it, although the material energy will offer different varieties. And that's the trick. We see different varieties. Oh, I can have it in pink. I can have it in purple. I can have it in a limousine, in a Hummer, in a Mercedes-Benz, or in a Toyota. So much variety, this must be good. Variety is the mother of enjoyment. That's a saying. Variety is the mother of enjoyment. So when you experience variety, it means you're living the life, you're enjoying. But actually, once you taste, even just on the platform of sadhana, when we're performing under rules and regulations, under the instructions of the spiritual master, which is what is mentioned later on in the text, that because the spiritual master is a representative of the Supreme Lord, he's a direct via medium in which the mercy is coming. Right? The mercy comes, it's like, you know, when you're connecting pipes and it's transporting water from A to Z, or electricity, there is a conductor, you know, certain elements conduct heat better than others. So the spiritual master is not tampering with the mercy, is not tampering with the product, is producing or is giving the product as it is, because he's the, he or she is the representative. And in that way, everything is delivered intact. So like that, we get given what is best. We get given what is real, no adulteration. If you've ever played musical chairs, so not musical chairs, Chinese whispers, as a child. Has anyone ever played Chinese whispers? Yeah? Okay. So you know, even if there's a circle of just four of you, you whisper something in someone's ear, by the time it gets back, it has been manipulated so many times because we are defective. We can't even hear properly. Even if someone is whispering a message in your ear, and because our mind is predisposed to think a certain way and to interpret a message a certain way, and because we like to add our own flavor to things, or maybe instead of saying this, I'll say it this way. So you whisper it in someone's ear, then they think the same way. Oh yeah, I'll make it my own. I'll brand this message in my own way, tell it to my other friend, brand it in a different way, by the time we want to see what the real message was, it has changed. So that is what we do. We are defective. The material existence means we will be defective. In perfect senses, we have a propensity to cheat others, to cheat ourselves. We're illusioned. So we have both these propensities. So whatever we do, we'll want to manipulate, we'll want to change. But the spiritual master is none different from Krishna in the sense that his message is the same message that Krishna is giving, because it is coming in disciplic succession, a bona fide disciplic succession. So what we read from Srila Prabhupada's Swami will be the same thing that Srila Prabhupada will teach us, because it is coming in parampara. It is coming in a particular school of thought. It's coming in a line, an unbroken line. So the message going back to Lord Chaitanya is still there. The teachings of Lord Chaitanya are still there, and they have been passed down through Srila Prabhupada and his disciples. So in this way, we get the real fruit. We don't get the fake. Prabhupada gave us Bhagavad Gita as it is. So we're not getting the fake or the watered-down version. And another question this girl was asking me was, how do you know that this, this thing is real? It's for you, or it's for the whole world? What if things haven't changed? Where's the proof? And I said, well, the proof is, the process is a science. It has, and I showed you a few books. It says that if you do this, the resultant will be, you will experience this, you will live your life like this. Therefore, I can tell you my experience, that is what was happening. I was eating all sorts of things. I was drinking, smoking. No regulation. And I was addicted to that lifestyle. But I tested it out. And quite frankly, I was just testing. I remember saying to my friends, I think I was 19 going on 20, and we were going to meet at the university. There was a program, and it was during the summer giving the talk. And we were committed to giving him a hard time. We had made a plan that there's a Swami coming. He's going to tell us to stop partying. Because we'd met a few Swamis before. And we said, this is what we're going to do. We're going to sit in the front. And we're going to question him like anything. And because we were proud of who we were. Breast University, we had money, we had anything. We were so pompous and proud. We're going to tell him this. We're going to question him. And then we arrived, I remember, Radhasan was there, Raj Krishna was there, Kavi Kanapur was there. I remember just seeing the Swami, and we thought, we're a bit hesitant, we're like, he looks like one of those, he's gonna give us a hard time. So we go in the lecture theater and we start swaying. I think he was speaking about something from the three modes of material nature. And within the first 5 minutes, we just looked at each other, and we knew we had no chance at all, because this man knows what he's saying. We cannot come back. We can't win this one. And we tried. Oh, Swamiji, we're from Africa. Our life is like this, and this is so far. We tried everything, and it didn't work. Right. So. At some point, we just had to admit, we said, well, actually, what you're saying is real. It's true. So, like that, we had an idea, we had an agenda, but because what he was saying was so potent and was in line, we had read the books, and we wanted to see if this one was actually walking the walk and talking the talk. Right? So we're like, we're university students, we're intelligent. And then he started giving us facts. We were all studying philosophy, law, sociology. And he was quoting people that we knew. So for us, that was impressive. Oh, this man is a Swami. He lives in this world, but he doesn't get entangled. But he knows his stuff. He's not oblivious to the world. And that was very, very impressive. So using Prabhupada's books, he was able to convince me that this is a bona fide way of living. And it is a very practical way of living. And the rest is history. So when we accept this process of Krishna consciousness, we see the examples, we see the bona fide representative, which is coming in a line, a chain of teachers who are not delivering a message that's been tampered with. There's no Chinese whispers. We can verify what's being taught to us through the books. So it's very important that when we're in a contaminated state, that we follow the instructions of someone who has been trained, and someone who is out of those clutches to a certain degree. So traditionally, of course, this process of self-realization, particularly this process of bhakti, it was given to the king, it was educated to the kings, to the brahmanas, and they received it in the proclamation. They had gurus themselves who taught them the process, and they in turn gave it to the citizens. So everyone was educated in spiritual science and also taken care of materially. So if something is received in its proper medium, there's no chance of it being adulterated. But if the medium is not proper, if the medium itself is contaminated, it will not give the desired outcome. So when we do not discharge devotional service properly, then we get all these qualities that are mentioned in this verse. This violence towards ourselves, towards others, pride, anger, envy, all these things will manifest. Because the process of bhakti brings about auspicious qualities. So if you're practicing, or if we're trying to be on the path of perfection, naturally, good qualities should surface. And of course, in between, when we're going through our purification stage, all sorts of things are going to come out, all sorts of poisonous qualities are going to come out to get purified. But if year after year, decade after decade, we're practicing bhakti and we're still proud and angry and envious and violent and full of Chinese whispers, then there's a problem in how we're actually applying the process. The problem is our application. The problem is not the process. But sometimes, you know, I used to say myself, something is wrong, it's not working. No, nothing. Something I'm doing is wrong. Not that something is wrong in the process. The process itself has been tried and tested. Tick. 100%. It works. But how we apply it? That's the thing. Are we chanting attentively, or are we just moving our lips? Are we putting our heart on our service, or are we just there geographically, physically, mentally? So the process works, but under these conditions, under anger, violence, envy, illusion, madness, under lust, anger, and greed, we will not be able to feel incalculably condensed bliss. We will not be able to feel this happiness that keeps rising at every moment. We won't feel that because we're not applying properly, we're not applying the ointment of bhakti properly. So in order to make sure that we're applying the process properly, not only do we have to educate ourselves by reading what the process entails, but we also have to take guidance non-stop. Even when we're extremely advanced, still we are under someone's guidance, we are under someone's shelter. We're never in our own island, just practicing on our own. You know, at the topmost level, everyone has someone that they're working under, whether it's, you know, in Vrindavan, under Vrinda Devi, or under Lalita Vishaka, whoever it might be, we are always guided on how to please the senses of the Lord. And it doesn't mean that we're incompetent or we're not worthy. It just means we take into consideration that we don't know everything all the time. We can be guided, we can be taught how to better serve Krishna at every moment. And as Derenji Maharaj always says in some of his classes, We should think that somewhere out there in the ISKCON world, someone is doing this service much better. That we're not perfecting. I'm not the perfect garland maker. I'm not the perfect wig maker. I'm not the perfect speaker. Because with that mentality, we will always strive to do better for Krishna. We'll always try. But if we think we've attained already, then we won't endeavor much. We'll be comfortable. We won't push ourselves even further. So it is important that we take guidance and we're challenged. We have to be challenged in Krishna consciousness. If we don't have a challenge, we'll stay comfortable. And we won't tax our brains thinking how to give Krishna to others. Prabhupada is very much known for saying we should tax our brains and think how we can spread Krishna consciousness. That means plan and execute. Not that we just sit and think all the time and no action, but actually plan and execute. And nourish ourselves at the same time by taking association of devotees. Yes, there are different grades of devotees, whether it's kind of Stamajam, Uttama. All devotees should be respected. The Nectar of Instruction explains this in the fifth text that yes, there are different grades of devotees and we associate with them differently to get inspiration, we associate with them differently to do service, and we associate with those who are free from these qualities so that we can better advance in our Krishna consciousness. So in different conversations, even Lord Chaitanya would speak about the different grades of devotees. Not that we look down upon or we become proud, but the power to discriminate is a sign of intelligence, because we want to become better, we want to advance. Therefore, it is only best that we do discriminate to a certain degree based on association. You don't want to just give or take association that is not conducive for your bhakti. We want to accept that which is favorable and reject that which is not favorable. And sometimes because of the association of the most mature nature, our devotional service can be performed ignorantly or passionately. We want to avoid performing devotional service free from the modes, as it is mentioned, free from anger, free from malice, illusion, and envy, and all the negative qualities that may arise due to associating with the three modes of material nature. But we respect the devotee. In the text 5 of Nectar of Instruction, the purport, Prabhupada explains that actually even a devotee on the Kanista platform should be respected mentally, even when speaking with Satyavraj Khan, speaking with when Lord Chaitanya is speaking with Srila Rupa Goswami, explaining the different levels of devotee, and also explaining how we should respect one another. And it is the level of faith that distinguishes one devotee from another. Of course, other qualities as well. So in one instance, look, in the 11th canto of Bhagavatam, it's explained that a person who is very faithfully engaged in the worship of the deity in the temple but does not know how to behave towards devotees or people in general is called a Kanista. And a Majjam is a devotee who worships the Supreme Personality of God as the highest object of love and makes friends with those devotees and is merciful to the ignorant and avoids those who are envious by nature. So even with these examples, there are certain persons that we want to avoid because we do not want these qualities to bring us, the negative qualities or the lower qualities to bring us down or taint what we're trying to achieve, that spotless devotional quality that we're trying to achieve. So we do discriminate on the basis of we want to make spiritual advancement. But discriminate doesn't mean we become disrespectful. It just means we take what is necessary from the association and we seek out that association that will inspire, that will challenge us to take our Krishna consciousness to a higher level. So being proud of our personalities or being envious or vengeful of others, if we have those qualities, then of course we try hard to try to get rid of those qualities. Our lower nature, our lower tendencies disappear or they get purified based on how vigorously we practice the process of hearing and chanting. Whether we're just doing it mechanically or are we actually putting our heart, combining the heart and the mind and trying to perform devotional service. So it's not a lackadaisical endeavor. We have to work on ourselves, and the quickest way, of course, to get purified and to appreciate the process, to appreciate the devotees, is to try to give Krishna to others. Then we'll appreciate this process even more, because if we don't try to give Krishna to others, if we just try to give Krishna to ourselves, we're still going to have that feeling of despondency. We'll still feel despondent. There will still be a lacking in the heart, because the living entity becomes pleased when the Lord is glorified. And what way to glorify the Lord than spreading His glory, spreading His name to whomever we meet. And as one devotee told me the other day, actually months ago, we were speaking, I think it was Kartik, and we were just speaking about the pastime. And the devotee was sharing with me how they heard in a class by Radhanath Swami that if we closely study this Damodara Leela, that Mother Yashoda was trying to bind Krishna by herself using the rope, and she personally looked for the rope all over the place, and it was only till she engaged others in Krishna's service that she was able to bind Krishna. So he explained that when we engage others in Sankirtan, then that gives the highest pleasure to Krishna. When we engage others, not that I just do my little puja, I just do my little service, but when we engage others in Krishna's service, it gives the highest pleasure. That's when Krishna himself says in Bhagavad Gita, there'll not be anyone more dear to me than one who explains this knowledge to others. The more we give, as the Panchatattva explained, the more they plundered the storehouse of love of God. And then they went out and gave and distributed that love. And the more they distributed, the more they tasted. So the more we distribute Krishna, the more we want to hear and serve Krishna, the more we will distribute Krishna, we'll want to hear and serve more. So like that, it's ever increasing. We will never perfect serving Krishna. Never perfect. Vice Krishna once said, your chanting will never be good enough. And he paused, and I couldn't understand them. I thought, this is it, then what's the point? It will never be good enough. He said, it will never be good enough because it is the expression of pure love. It is unlimited, it is ever increasing. So there will never be a point where you think, I've mastered my chanting. I have mastered serving the deity. I have mastered this. It's ever increasing. This is what it's like when we perform pure devotional service. We want to give more and more and more to Krishna, to please Him. But to start off, we are practicing sadhana bhakti. We go through the stages of Kshetshagni and Sudulabhas, Shubhada, Mokshala, Kakrita, Shandananda, Visheshagna, and Shri Krishna Karshani, and we attain Krishna. But to start off, there's a lot of work we have to do, a lot of purification that has to happen, and as the science explains, after going through this purification, we will attain Krishna and we will continue to serve Krishna. So, I'll just repeat the verse. Devotional service executed by a person who is envious, proud, violent, and angry, and who is a separatist, is considered to be in the mode of darkness. So I didn't mention anything about being a separatist, because that is explained in the next verse. So whoever will give tomorrow can talk more about the separatist mentality. And I'll stop there. Thank you very much for your time. Are there any questions or comments?
Okay, so we can all try to practice free from violence, anger, and envy,
and make our way through, and try to give Krishna to others as best as we can. That will please Krishna. Actually, one story, quick one. I met someone the other day who used to come to Urban Yoga 7 years ago, 8 years ago, and I haven't seen him for a long time, although we speak on Facebook here and there, just to check up on him. And they were telling me about their experience coming to Urban Yoga and what they learned, how they've changed their eating habits, they're trying to be healthier, they like going to Hare Krishna Valley. And I questioned and said, so, you know, why is it that still, after all these years, you're still doing all these things and, you know, you want a cleaner lifestyle, you want something more. And he said, you know, what I saw when I came to this place was people were very nice, they were very genuine. And although the philosophy sometimes was too high and couldn't understand much, came to a few retreats, they blew his mind too, it was just too much. Although he said the one thing that kept him was the friendships. And he said, because I had Hare Krishna friends, I'm continuing this because you do not have genuine friendship in this world. People leave you, people don't listen, but I felt like I had friends in new people, and therefore I continue to support you wherever I go. So I thought that was a very nice thing, that developing friendship with people when you meet out there, not that we become their besties or we wouldn't break their hair or like do whatever, but we genuinely try to look out for people and share with them how they can improve their life. It goes a long way because they never forget. Quite honestly, we might have really strong bonds here with a devotional community, but out there, it's a lonely place, it's a lonely planet, as they say. So the friendship that people form with devotees, it sticks to them. Here with some of the groups I used to do here, the teachers who would come, they bring their students here because when they were young, they met a devotee at a Mumba parade. They were only 8 years old, and the devotee was very nice to them. They met a devotee at Crossways. The devotee was very nice. And it's because of that, they developed a favorable disposition, and now they want people to know devotees because of the good interaction. And that's one thing by Shashika Prabhu also says, make sure that when you give someone, or even if they don't take it, you leave them with a favorable impression. Because later on, they will take it. That similar thing happened to my brother and my sister. Somewhere, this brahmachari who came, Sanyasi Sanchi Prabhu, my brother had never been interested in Krishna consciousness. But somehow the other Sanyasi Sanchi Prabhu met him in Johannesburg, distributing books, Prabhupada Marathon. Very nice, very charming. And then he said, you know, I know all about this. My sister is a Hare Krishna. She always tried to manipulate me, give me this and that, but I didn't listen. But you're a really nice guy. I like you. So I'm going to take these books. So he took the books, gave it to his girlfriend. Sister, same thing happened. Got a book in LAX airport. Devotees doing books there. And I asked him. She was, you know, full hijab and everything. And I said, you know, why did you take it? So, because they're very nice people. I was very happy with a nice interaction. So sometimes just being the loving devotees that we are is enough to melt people's hearts. So the next time we can think about, even if someone doesn't take a book, even if someone doesn't stay for a full program, if we leave with a nice impression, it will allow them to take something else later on in life. And then we have the end of the talk. All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.